Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock, Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined again by Trevor. No Connor this week, but this is the last time. Well, I can't say last time. This is the last time ever that we're not joined by Connor. But no, next week we should all be back in the same place.
Should be.
Finally.
Pending any disaster.
That's true. You can never count your eggs before they hatch. We're going to start off with a little Patreon question of the week and then get you caught up on everything that happened last week with the Natalie Ryan case, go into the preserve, do a little Trevor's trivia, talk about some media plans that got announced, and then finally update our Griplock power rankings.
It's been a while. We get ready to dig in.
So let's start with the Patreon question of the week. This has been actually fun the past few weeks. If you're not sure what this is, basically we have our Heiser Club, and every week we have a Q&A podcast on our Patreon. You can find it on patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. You can actually get a 30-day free trial if you want to just watch. You can binge all the Q&A stuff, exclusive videos, discount codes, a bunch of fun stuff, and there's a 30-day free trial available. But the past few weeks, obviously, different ones of us have been out of town. And so, like, last week was the first time I heard the question. Last week, I was on the mailbag by myself, so this will be the first time you hear this question.
If you ever wanted to suggest a Griplock topic, this is your best way to get it in. Honestly, we may even just have to start creating a separate, like, question submission just for the Griplocked one, so people have like a fair chance to like do the fun question and then like the one that might get on Griplocked.
I don't know. I kind of like the something like that. I might just only have fun questions to pull from.
That's true.
An interesting one from Derek Rashke. He also did not. He was not the first question again this week, by the way.
Derek, you are really slacking.
Which, to be fair, I did not put it up anywhere close to a normal time. I threw it up like Wednesday afternoon.
I was impressed because I had a reminder on my phone to put up the prompt on Wednesday because I was like, I don't know if they'll remember to do that. Like, they don't ever do that. It's my thing. And then I went to look and you had put it up. So I was good on you.
But Derek Rashke said, if Innova was erased from disc golf history, what do you think would be different about disc golf? Who would be the top brand?
Wow. Very interesting question.
So how I took this question, you can take it a different way, is that includes Dave Dunapace's erased from disc golf.
Oh, I mean, yeah, good point. Wow, yeah, ooh, there are some serious implications. Because, yeah, if you're just thinking from a brand standpoint, but you can't really think of it just that way.
So that's why I took Dave Dunapace also erased from disc golf history.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to say, so if Dave Dunapace never exists, I do believe eventually the disc would have got innovated. I mean, darn, there. It's hard not to say, like, disc golf may never have even gotten anywhere without Dave Dunapace. Now, Steady Ed was pretty set on the game. Like, he was driving the game. He created the PDGA, right? So, you know, that was... And there was still, like, that grassroots thing. But, like, Innova took the disc to the next level, which really turned it into a sport. I do think that they probably would have arrived at beveled edge technology just because it made sense for the sport. But if they didn't, then I think the sport would have either fizzled out or it would have stayed a park game and very casual park game and never caught on if they wouldn't have gotten to beveled edge. If they would have, I think a lot of that would have fallen on DGA to arrive at. And I think the DGA would probably be a lot bigger right now.
Like, that's what I said.
They could pretty... I don't want to say they could replace Innova because, you know, ultimately, Dave Dunapace had a pretty insane vision for the sport. And, like, I don't want to discredit what he's done. But you could argue that, yeah, DGA certainly would have a lot larger market share. And they probably... And this all just depends, though, on, like, would they have thought... We should bevel the edges of these discs and make these things go further. I mean, somebody would have thought it up. You could almost even argue that maybe somebody else would have just done it. I don't know.
I said, like, of the modern companies, DGA would be the most logical. Well, at first I said...
That's, like, the easiest conclusion.
I said the easiest answer would just be Discraft because of the current marketplace. Like, but going back, Steady Ed, DGA would have been the logical next one. But it'd be interesting to see,
Gateway.
Like, would they have come... Yeah. Would they have come up with a different way, a different disc technology?
If Gateway wasn't beefing with Innova back then, dude, who knows? That's the other thing, too, is like, what would they have turned the disc
into? Well, also on the mailbag, I couldn't think of the word bevel, and I kept using the word blunt by accident, which is not at all what disc golf went to. It was not blunt edge technology.
Yeah.
It was definitely bevel.
I don't know. But
that was an interesting question.
You take away Dave Dunapace from the sport, and nothing great happens.
No.
We certainly really needed him at least that from my understanding. I know some people don't like Dave Dunn.
He was at USDGC last year. He was the person in disc golf that I was the most excited to meet.
He's a legend, man.
Yeah. He was
it'll be a sad day when Davey D isn't around anymore.
We're not gonna think about that, Davey.
I wonder if they'll put his, you know how they did the ashes in the disc thing for
I think that was Steady Ed's wishes.
Steady Ed. It was in his will. Yeah. And you can still buy those discs to this day. I think they're like still on their site, which is like that just if that doesn't tell you something about the disc golf collector's market, like and how much people don't really care about history in our sport yet. I still hold on to hope that eventually they will. But like right now, the collector's market is all about like what's the newest thing with a crazy stamp that's not about like history. I hope that changes. But like I'm pretty sure you can still go to DGA's website and buy a disc that contains the ashes of the founder of our sport. Could you imagine if Michael Jordan died and his ashes were put in some playing card? People would be losing their minds. Like they would be buying them up. They'd be worth millions of dollars. Like as I'm saying, like it's just it's crazy to me.
I'm trying to find the Steady Ed
Memorial disc set. Still there, right?
Limited number of discs, and they were given to friends. Sale proceeds going to 501c3.
Add to cart.
Yeah, I can add to cart.
And they're $200 for two discs. But
there's a two disc. I think you can get a one disc too.
But these contain the ashes of the founder of our sport.
This comes with a driver and putter.
Somewhere in a warehouse, there's a stack of discs containing the remains of Steady Ed. What, like, that to me just doesn't really click. Like,
someone needs to write a like fiction book about like.
I think we need to
like, own, like a haunting of the DGA warehouse.
I think that like everybody in foundation needs, if you can get like $100 one of them, we need to all chip in so that we can own one of those and like do our part.
It is fascinating.
Because it's almost like insulting.
I wonder
like,
how many they made.
Yeah, how much?
Well, because like,
who is like who had like, to be the person
if you put,
to be like taking the teaspoon and measuring ashes into. Well, that's what I'm saying, is
how do we know how many ashes are per disc?
I don't want to be disrespectful to Steady Ed.
But. No, but that's what I was more saying. Like, I wonder, it could have been like an obscene amount ran because it's just spread out in 5,000-10,000 discs or something.
I don't know.
Let's get back to business.
Crazy though.
So post grip lock.
You're welcome for the advertising, DGA.
Yeah, if you want a piece of disc golf history,
send that check.
If you want a piece of disc golf history, I just looked. They are still available. So discgolf.com. They also own that URL, discgolf.com. That might be their most valuable asset. Is discgolf.com.
I'll tell you, it's pretty valuable.
So post grip lock, pre the preserve, a Minnesota judge ruled in favor of Natalie Ryan, who would go on to compete in the preserve. This was similar to what happened at the OTB.
The same law, pretty much.
Yeah.
Where their protected class includes gender identity.
But the key difference here, it seemed that the Pro Tour's lawyers didn't feel like after the original ruling, they had anything to file for an emergency appeal on as they did in California.
Yeah. Their main point of contention was, again, like they were saying that it wasn't timely, like, because once again, these things are getting filed. In my mind, it has to be. Well, I don't say it has to be. I'm assuming that there's some timing involved with Natalie's team here.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we're going to file these emergency. And like the Pro Tour's defense was like saying that it wasn't timely. Like, there was no.
Well, they used that here again.
Yeah.
And the judge said the PDJ and DGPT do raise a valid point regarding the timeliness of the filing of Ryan's motion.
They didn't care.
Based on when she knew of the PDGA's new policy and the impact it would have on her ability to compete at the Preserve Championship. However, this court is not in a position to determine, nor will it engage in speculation regarding any tactical or strategic decision-making surrounding the timing of the motion. Even if the court acknowledges the suspect nature of the timeline, such suppositions are not fatal to Ryan's claim.
Yeah, I think that's just a court rule, I guess, or like something in the legal proceedings where they're not allowed to tie that in, I guess.
So the PDGA and the Pro Tour, this is from the Ultra World article, PDGA and Pro Tour could opt to file for an emergency appeal as they did in California, but they'd appear less likely to succeed. In California, there was a clear jurisdictional argument in their favor that the lower court ignored. That jurisdictional issue is not an issue here in Minnesota. So I think that was the key as to why the Pro Tour didn't go on.
Yeah.
So the Pro Tour in a statement wrote, this motion filed against the PDGA and the DGPT has now been granted by the court and will allow her to compete in the FPO division at the Preserve Championship. The DGPT disagrees with this decision, but will comply with the order and the event will continue as planned. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
What this did spark however, was we're going to call it a press conference.
That was crazy. It was.
But this led to a press conference of sorts. It was actually live streamed on Brody Smith's Instagram.
And Kat's Instagram.
And I believe it was recorded. I don't think that the post produced, however you want to call that version, has been released yet.
I think you can watch it on at least Kat's Instagram.
But Kat's Instagram, I think she actually posted it, yeah.
Yeah.
So UltiRolled tweeted, a group of FPO players is now live on Brody's Instagram and at the Preserve, giving a press conference protesting Natalie Ryan competing at the event in the court ruling in Minnesota. So we have seen players slowly speak up. We saw, obviously, the Stockton Declaration. I forget exactly what the whole thing was called, but many of the women that signed that were present here. One notable person missing, and we've kind of heard why, post was Kristen Tatar. I saw a lot of people pointing that out, but Kristen made her statement on Tour Life, on the Tour Life podcast. It might be easier for me to find this on my phone, but she made her statement.
Did she make an additional time or statement as well?
So she made this. The post that she made on Instagram was essentially explaining her absence. It wasn't, that's not what the whole post was for, but it, in a roundabout way, it did.
I didn't see this.
So we'll get into the press conference in a second, but Kristen Tatar said, my last tournament on U.S. soil before Worlds is over, finishing second behind Katrina, who was on fire this weekend. Congrats. I'm very happy to head home for a couple of days, but before that, I wanted to say that the last 2.5 weeks have been quite stressful, but also liberating in a way. It started with me opening up about what I think about trans women playing in FPO on the Tour Life podcast. When sharing my opinions, I know I could often look cool, calm, and collected, but to say that this has not affected me in a stressful way would be a lie. Talking about a sensitive subject in another language away from home and loved ones has been hard for me.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So this led me to delete all social media apps earlier in the week when the same issue was brought to daylight again with the Preserve Championship. For my own mental wellness, I decided to stay away from the flood of information until the completion of the tournament in the hopes of helping to draw attention to what is important now and what I'm here for, disc golf. That being said, I hope we all reach common grounds and that will give peace to both parties. Now I'm ready to pack my stuff up and head home, but before that, me and Katie Tati, I believe, will celebrate my birthday tomorrow, which was today. So happy birthday, Kristen.
Happy birthday, Kristen.
In Chicago, let me know what there are fun things to do over there. That's kind of, Kristen was basically like, I've said my piece. I just want to get back to playing disc golf. So that's why
I never thought about, imagine, and Kristen has good English. Like, let's be clear. She obviously speaks English well, but one of the biggest things, like when you are speaking English as a second or third or whatever language, is like not knowing the exact correct words to use to communicate things. Can you imagine trying to like go over your complex opinions on a social matter like that?
Well,
and
also,
it's not your first language. That's terrifying.
English is obviously my first language,
and it's still terrifying.
There are so many intricacies in what is okay to say and what's offensive to say.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of people can read through it and hear your intentions behind what you're saying, and it's more so the way you say something than what you say.
Doesn't mean that's the way they approach it when they come after you on social media.
True. Yeah. But I mean, to be answering interview questions in a foreign language about a topic like this, where the word choice is so important. I can't even imagine. That's terrifying. But anyway, so if you want to hear more on Kristen's opinion, you can watch the Tour Life podcast. I believe Kristen also signed the Stockton Declaration, so that also kind of tells you Kristen's opinion. But she was notably not here. Who was here was a big chunk of the FPO field and also a decent bit of MPO players standing behind them. Notably, I believe I saw Gannon Burr, Isaac and Ezra Robinson, Chandler Kramer, Alden Harris, Nico LaCastro, Ezra Aderhold. I'm sure I'm missing some other ones.
Those are the ones I saw, I think.
And they were standing behind the group of women having this press conference in support of them. And UltiWorld tweeted out a few quotes from this press conference here, and I'll just pull a few of them. Katrina. So basically, several women got up and spoke explaining their stance, why they believe Natalie Ryan should not be able to compete in FPO and trans women in general, and you know, kind of just defended, in their view, defended the fair competition in the FPO field is how they worded it. So starting with Katrina Allen, she said, we are standing here for fair competition and we ask the disc golf community to hear our voices and hear our statements. Sarah Hokum said the creation of Title IX created a protected sex-based space that allowed for women to be included in sports. And she went on multiple times, and I thought this was a very interesting outlook because Sarah Hokum, as Jennifer Allen echoed similar things, was talking about, like, when they first got into disc golf, part of the reason they traveled to play was just to find other FPO players. Sure. Because it, when they were playing their local scenes, they were the only one.
Very true.
Which that just kind of shows farther back, like Sarah Hokum's coming at this from years and years of experience. And then Hokum said, unfortunately, the social dynamic of this issue has effectively silenced and canceled voices. Hokum also said the science is in. 13 recent studies have shown that transgender women retain athletic advantages even after hormone replacement therapy. Trans women may fall below performance standards of the average man, but they are certainly above the standards of the average woman. Hokum also said, I am one of a large number of FPOs who have to deal with playing against Natalie Ryan in their mental game, and we can no longer be silent. And then she went on to say, a little bit later, if trans women can compete, female sports will become meaningless and players will step away from sports. The female protected division should not be forced to pay reparations for a society that treats others poorly. And then there's a few. So Jennifer Allen spoke, Kat Merch got up and spoke, Rebecca Cox got up and spoke, Jessica Weiss, Kona Montgomery. And then Katrina Allen and Sarah Hokum got back up to wrap it all up and put it together. And these are kind of like their closing statements, if that makes sense. So Katrina Allen said, this has been a behind the scenes fight. We're trying to keep this peaceful and share our feelings. A big thank you to the Pro Tour and the PDGA for keeping things as civil as possible. Sarah Hokum said, we're leading with love. We're not trying to attack anyone. And Katrina Allen echoed and said, instead of sending a hateful comment to the other side, please uplift us this weekend. That would be the most useful and helpful. And that was kind of the wrap up. This was not met well in the disc golf, in the opposing disc golf world. It was met very well in people that agreed. I think neutral people was also met well with, because if you watched, if you listened, they were arguing for what they felt is right, for fair competition for themselves, and they were trying to provide facts. They were trying to, they were getting emotional because they felt that the fair competition in their division is being attacked, and they're trying to stand up not only for themselves, but also what this could mean for future generations of female professional disc golf. And they're standing up for what they believe is protecting that division, which I think at the end of the day, like I've said on a grip lock before, that's what everyone's trying to do, is yeah. protect female disc golf. There's just differing opinions on what does that mean. Mm-hmm. And at no point did I hear them in this attack Natalie Ryan or the LGBTQ community. I didn't hear them attack anyone. I heard them trying to defend themselves and say, like, at literally at one point they were saying, this is just about the FPO division, and the science basically points to there being an advantage for trans women coming into FPO. And I think the end statement there of Sarah Hokum and Katrina Allen wrapped that up. This was not met well from the other side. It was seen as very hateful.
The live chat was...
Yeah, and Brody was getting dragged into it as well when...
Hilarious.
Brody has given his platform to people on both sides, and I don't think he has any his podcast and his platform is pretty wide open to whoever wants to speak. I mean, he gave Paige Pierce did a full interview and in it fought for Natalie Ryan and trans women's rights on Tour Life podcast, and he gave the same platform to Kristen Tatar, who, you know, fought for the FPO, you know, I don't think this group of FPO women really goes by anything. Like, I don't think they have a specific group, if that makes sense. Like, they don't...
Yeah, the opposition.
Yeah, I sure. But so Brody's given his platform to both sides, but this side, I mean, was trying to... it aligns with Brody haters as well.
Yeah, it's like...
And they were just trying to smear him
like
on Twitter.
It's like circular reasoning. They're like... They're basically going after Brody, being like, you're giving your platform to enhance a false narrative, when it's like, well, why is that narrative? Like... That
narrative is only false to you.
Yeah, right. It's not false to them. Like,
the other side, your narrative is false.
Yeah, it's like, it's very one-sided, like, circular reasoning. It's frustrating to see that, like, when, like, clearly there's a huge part of this sport, no matter how you think about this, there's a huge part of the FPO division that feels this way. They're absolutely allowed to speak out about it in
and
a peaceful way.
They did so in a very respectful and peaceful way.
Yeah, so, like, it's really sad to see people just and just like just poking at them, and it's like, come on, guys, like, I don't understand. Here's the bottom line is, you know, clearly now what we have, and we've known about this for weeks now, but we have a pretty heavy, I don't know if I want to say majority, but I would, a pretty good majority of like the known FPO players.
Yeah.
You definitely have a lot of them, a hearty percentage of them, and an important percentage of them. You have them believing one thing. You have probably a good bit of players that are neutral and then some that are on the other side of things, but they're upset. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are on their side that are like, well, you should just boycott the event. Why are you playing the event? Well, it's not that simple. Obviously, there's the monetary side. Like, they need to make their living. But there's also, what about those young girls that bought tickets to go watch Katrina Allen play in Minnesota for the only time all year, and then she just doesn't play? Like, there are some other things at stake, too. And then, you know, you obviously have the Pro Tour who disagrees with what happened, but as far as the ruling, not what Katrina Allen and them did. But their hands are tied. So moving forward, it's a little complicated because, like, you have this large group of players that are upset. The Pro Tour's hands are tied. Now, obviously, what we also know is that this has only taken place in two states with certain legislation. If that legislation... Well, how's that
legislation?
Word? Legislation. There we go. I have tongue-tied right now. If the... if that doesn't spread, if that stays contained in these two states, then you'd have to imagine the Pro Tour won't revisit them. Because
it's a very interesting one.
As far as I know, or maybe they, I don't know, if you have that many players speaking out, the Pro Tour frustrated in decisions, you know, they didn't want those decisions to be made, you probably imagine that if it's only two states, and it stinks because, like, California is a big part of disc golf, the preserve is always somewhere that they like to visit, I think. That's a bummer. But if it's only two states, then you do have a hard time believing that they would go back. If that's their only opportunity, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see if, like, especially once the season ends, if this, like, goes further on, like, a large scale case. But if state by state rulings is the only way this works, and if there is only two states, I don't know, because we had kind of predicted Minnesota would be the next one.
Yeah, because it was around the time of the California, of the OTB Open, that
they had
the precedent, the powerlifting case
right.
happened.
And so I don't know if there's anything else. I mean, it'll come up again when Throw Pink happens because it's an A tier. So who knows, you know, what that... I'm expecting, you know, something similar to this. I don't know if they'll go as far as boycotting. That's... And not playing the event, you know, you'll probably see more, you know, wearing the matching shirts. But there's only so much you can do. I don't know. It's very...
Well, the weird thing is you're raising awareness in a sport that the governing body agrees with you.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
right.
The weird
that's
line.
The governing... They are getting their opinion out, but the governing body agrees. So therefore, it's almost like where does that message get to that actually something happens? Because, like... It's not changing opinions, I don't think. I think it's just
opinions are set in stone.
It's pretty much like politics at these days where, you know, people are voting blue or they're voting red. You know, they're pretty set. I won't say that it's not changing them at all because, you know, that's not fair. I'm sure there are some people who are sympathizing with them that maybe wouldn't have. Maybe there's people that are switching the other way. I don't know. But I would say a large percentage of people are pretty set on what they think about the situation. So where does that message go and what does this do down the line? Because, yeah, it's like the Pro Tour, they agree. So, like, usually when you have a player protest, it's regarding a decision made by the governing body, and that's not the case. So I'd just be interesting to see. I have a feeling that this is probably going to boil down. This is not going to go away. This is probably going to boil down to a much larger court case eventually. And who knows how far it could get. I mean, because, like, when you talk about, you know, stuff like this sets precedent for other sports, it's like, it's interesting stuff. So I don't know.
In all of this, I've always tried to just remain neutral, just give you the facts as we've found them, and just let you keep you updated. But in doing so, obviously, we hear a lot from both sides. And one thing that it kind of upset me this weekend, and I was not surprised by, I guess, because it's emotions were high in all around, and things get said that people sometimes the truth comes out of how someone genuinely feels when feelings get high, and other times they get pushed and they say something they don't genuinely mean. But when this was first coming, the first thing we heard was, well, look at the science and let science decide. And I agreed with that. But as Sarah Hokum pointed out, and as I found, like, there is a lot of science and some even peer-reviewed science that points to there being an advantage. So there's that. And then other people were saying, well, a bunch of men are talking about this opinion, this issue. Let's wait till we hear from the FPO field. But then we hear from the FPO field, and it's like, if what you're waiting for doesn't agree, then people are getting upset. But it's like, you heard from the FPO field, a vast majority, especially of top-end competing FPO players, but then they don't agree with you, and so now you get really upset at them. And I saw, you know, obviously we have seen some very hateful, uncalled-for things said in the direction of Natalie Ryan all season long for years. Uncalled for. I will never stand by that. No one should be attacking Natalie Ryan on a personal level, any way, shape, or form. But the same people that are getting upset at people attacking Natalie Ryan were then coming after Kona Panis and coming after Katrina Allen and coming after
Montgomery.
Kona Montgomery, I'm sorry. We're coming after them and saying awful things in you know.
Oh, yeah, that's brutal.
It was equally disgusting. And it's like, at some point, I'm sitting back and I'm trying to like just watch both sides because I'm trying to report on what's going on. And it's like both sides are yelling at a different version of themselves in the mirror, calling each other names and stuff, when I'm like, you're doing the same thing. So both sides, take a step back. Both of sides are being very hateful, and you know, emotions are getting high. Listen to what people are saying. Listen to what people are saying behind it. I'm not talking about the random one-off comments. You know, those aren't ever going to go anywhere. But I'm saying, listen to the players that are being directly involved with this, Natalie Ryan and the FPO field and other players. Natalie Ryan's obviously at the forefront of this. Listen to them and listen to their heart behind it. Listen to where they're coming from and try to be reasonable. If you can't do that, then sure, go, you know, comment whatever you want and be a hateful person and be miserable all day. You're welcome to do that. But if you listen to what's going on behind it, you'll find that really at the end of the day, I think a lot of people want the same thing as you, and they just have a different viewpoint or a different worldview that's leading them to this end result. And you throwing hateful comments at these women doesn't exactly help the situation at all. It was kind of gross to see. It's been gross to see towards Natalie Ryan, and it was equally gross to see towards these FPO players that stood up here. It was very, very interesting and frustrating weekend.
Pretty crazy drama in the disc golf world these days, I'll tell you.
Now, what happened at the Preserve result-wise, I didn't expect Katrina Allen to actually do it. I didn't expect Katrina Allen to actually win because
yeah, what the heck, Katrina?
There's a history book of the entire season to say she's not going to do it. But on the preview show, I did say she's going to be coming into this week with a chip on her shoulder because she has been one of the most vocal about mm-hmm. this, and this is all kind of coming to a head here.
Yeah.
And I was like, she's going to come in with a chip on her shoulder. She stood up for what she believed in here. That's either going to be a very liberating process and she's going to play very free and we're going to see Katrina Allen go off, or this is going to be a very restricting process and all the outside noise, because the hate was amplified, all the outside noise is going to crush her. It seemed to be a very liberating process. She came out, and this was a Katrina Allen. The results in FPO, we had Katrina Allen win, Kristen Tatar second, Holland Hanley third. This is a Katrina Allen we haven't seen this year, right?
Well, she won Vegas. We haven't seen since Vegas.
Since Vegas. Yeah. Okay. It just feels like we haven't seen it this
most
year.
Most of the year, we have not.
Very
seen
solid
it,
point. Yeah. And even in Vegas, I feel like this Katrina Allen played better than she did in Vegas. Maybe I just have the rest of the season to cloud my memory.
Yeah, she played pretty well. Vegas
was Paige or Kristen there. I don't think that either of them were.
That's a long time.
Kristen was not. I don't think Paige was either. Regardless, Katrina Allen played very solid.
Might have been a fake win
this weekend. Kristen and Paige both in the field.
Yeah.
And her putt was on the first two rounds mainly, but even the final round, she hit some putts she hadn't hit.
She needed to.
But the first two rounds, her putt was there.
Yeah.
And that is what always has been holding her back so far this season.
I mean, honestly, her putt has made a lot of strides in the past few years. I think that it's definitely still kind of streaky. But really, like, her strength has been throwing, and she just wasn't even throwing the disc well throughout the year. Because, like, you know, even if you're not putting well in the FPO division, you can get away with 60% C1X, and if you're throwing it well, you can still, heck, you can even win some days. She definitely looked like the cat we would normally expect to see, threw plenty of good shots. Now, that final round, you know, obviously it's pretty much her, and then Kristen was trailing by a pretty significant amount going into that final day. What was she up going into that final round?
Three.
Is it just
because they tied the final day?
Yeah. So she ended up, and she goes up as much as five, I think, early in that round, I believe.
Yes, right there. Yeah. Through hole three.
Yeah. So you know, she had a chance to pull away. Now, she tried to give it away a little bit. Kristen pulls back in. Kat has a really bad three putt from like really close after, you know, getting kind of big putted by Kristen.
Well, Kristen took five strokes in three holes.
Yeah.
Six, seven,
it,
eight.
She took the lead, I believe, Kristen.
I think that tied,
They were tied at 19, I think. And then, you know, I was very excited to see, okay, let's see if Kristen can pull it back together. She didn't really have to. Now, she didn't continue to fall apart, but Kristen then, after getting back in, it proceeded to just cough it up over the next four holes, which was kind of disappointing because I was like, all right, let's get a good finish here. But, you know, Kat stopped the bleeding, you know, as she took that double and then, you know, followed it up with a clean finish to that round. So props there. But, man, yeah, Kristen really threw it away. Moving down the stretch, not sure if it would have been enough to win, but it was kind of just a bummer from a spectator standpoint. I've seen that a few times out of Kristen this year, where it's like, I think actually the last time it happened, are you sure she wasn't in Vegas? That was Missy that did it at Vegas, but I think Kristen's done this once earlier this year where she like pulls it back. You're like, all right, because like a lot of times FPO, the field not being quite as deep, you see this happen where like, we're almost depending on like a Kristen to like make things interesting as a spectator. And then she gets it back. I'm like, here we go. And then like very quickly, just like over the next few holes, like it was the very next hole, I think was hole 11 where she chucked it OB. And I was kind of like, ah.
They had two holes where they both birdied 9 and 10. But then 11, yeah, she bogeyed. 12, she bogeyed.
Yeah.
She lost from 11 to 14. She lost four strokes and she lost by three.
She
overall
lost it right back. So, but yeah, I mean, Kristen, she can struggle with some inconsistencies. Threw some good shots, but then just some pretty poor efforts down the stretch there.
Yeah, I was trying to find this tweet from Stat Mando because this was fascinating. So this was going to the final day. Katrina Allen holds a 3-stroke lead heading to Championship Sunday in Minnesota over a charging Kristen Tatar. Tatar is 0-16 when trailing by 3+ strokes heading to the final round.
That kind of backs up what I was thinking. Is like, I feel like Kristen is very good at like being down like six, getting back in it, and then immediately as soon as she gets back into it, like I don't know what happens there.
She is good at playing with a lead, but apparently like when she's down
0-16,
she is not able to come
back.
That's
almost head scratching because like in the FPO division, there is a lot of opportunity.
What was
for
she trailing
swings
by in Waco? Because Waco
must have been two.
Ella Hansen was running away with it, remember?
Must have been two.
Or maybe Ella Hansen just pulled ahead in the final round and gave it back. Because this is going into the final round.
Yeah, I feel like I see that a lot where Kristen like is never, and clearly I guess the stats, she's not able to complete the comeback. I don't really know why. When Kristen starts playing bad for no reason, it really confuses me. Like all of a sudden she'll just start missing like 25 footers and like throwing just some really bad shots, like up shots and stuff. Like it's very confusing. I don't know what exactly happens, but you know, Katrina Allen at her best is a consistent golfer and plays a game kind of similar to what Kristen does when she wins well, where she just kind of hits fairways, throws simple shots. I will say Kat scrambled a few times pretty well. But yeah, when her putt is on, it's very serviceable.
Well, yeah, I mean, the past several years, I've always called...
She's best thrower, usually.
Exactly. That's what I've always said. Katrina Allen's the best thrower of the disc. And it got like... I got sick of saying it almost.
Yeah.
But that was the truth. This year, we haven't seen that, but that has become Kristen Tatar, where... Yeah, like if you throw the disc well enough and you give yourself enough looks at birdies, you can win or put yourself in contention week in and week out. And... let's call it what it was too. Kristen Tatar still finished in second. She still was only 3 strokes off the lead.
She had
a chance at winning. She's still having one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen. And she's headed back home to Europe. And she's going to head back home for a few days and then play in Europe for a while.
Big momentum for Kat though, to like get over the hump again. Like getting a second win for her now was really important. And I think that will really give her a boost. Cause like, I'm assuming she's going to be in Europe.
I think she said she was headed to Norway Saturday.
Yeah. So like that's a big time to get a win, you know, right heading into the major. And you know, you can flip your season around really quick. I mean, now she has 2 Elite Series wins on the year, which is already, you know, in a field that's dealing with Kristen, that's something.
Yes.
And if she can pile a major on top of it, there's a season for you.
Well, here's what's fascinating
is it
doesn't
take much. It takes a few good weekends out of the year, and you can have a good pro tour season these days. It's very true.
We haven't talked about Kat pretty much. That's what I'm saying. We haven't talked about Katrina Allen pretty much at all this year. Yeah. We talked about her when she won LVC. But then since then, I mean, she came in second at Open in Austin. A lot of, like, outside the top 10s. She came in third at Champions Cup, but, like, 22nd at Beaver State, 11th at OTB, 11th at Jonesboro, 18th at Music City, 9th at Portland. Like, she's been up and down all year, but then a win at the Preserve, and here she is second in the Pro Tour standings.
Yeah, and only moved up 2 spots. It's that just shows you the dominance of Kristen Tatar this year. That second place in the Pro Tour standings, you haven't seen a ton of this year.
Yeah.
Like, you have a sandwich, a win sandwich with a whole lot of not much in between, and that just shows you how dominant Kristen. I mean, it's pretty hilarious, because, like, you go down to third place, Missy Gannon. 0 wins this year, I believe. And hasn't, I mean, she's had some great, like, top fives, but it's just crazy how dominant Kristen Tatar has been. Because if you take Kristen Tatar out of this field, all of a sudden everybody's bunched up in there and you've got all these different winners. I mean, who knows? She's just a world beater right now. It's totally what Paul McBeth and Ricky were doing to the MPO field all those years, where it was like, yeah, this field would be, like, real interesting if they weren't there.
I forgot to do this. Before we got into results, we got caught up in the Natalie Ryan stuff. I was going to have you close your eyes and guess the year and be like, Katrina Allen, Paul McBeth, and Ricky Wysocki just won a disc golf tournament on the same day. Guess the year.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just happened. Yeah. This does not feel like 2023.
It is. That
you
is
have Paul, Ricky, and Kat back on top. Paul obviously winning in Europe. But the other thing that's interesting with the Pro Tour standings, Paige Pierce in 11th right now.
Yeah.
Well, she's 600 points away from Kristen
Tatar. Well, she was a Bonnaroo, man.
Yeah, I mean, between that, she won the Open at Austin, she won the OTB Open, and then she hasn't really played much, and when she has, like, 2 finishes outside the top 25.
It's going to be interesting to watch the majors this year, because the majors are going to do a lot of deciding in that FPO field on, like, what the narrative is at the end of the year, because, like, right now, the narrative is just this Kristen dominance. If Kristen, like, we have, like, technically 4 majors left for women, because, you know, major in our hearts.
I don't count U.S. women's.
Oh, so we, okay, so only
Throw Pink just takes over U.S. women's.
Oh, okay, so that's our play. So, you know, we have 3 majors left. So, like, if Kristen only takes 1 out of 3, for example, then there's some opportunity for other people. But if Kristen takes, like, 2 out of those 3, then, like, there's just no.
If Kristen wins European
it's
and Worlds.
So, it's like, so hard to believe that Kristen won't win Worlds this year. It's, like, almost with, because they'll play 5 rounds. Like, it's almost impossible to believe
I will
that
say
Kristen won't win.
Paige typically does pretty well at GMC.
Vermont, yeah.
But that's the only
5 rounds. Like, I'd have to think she's going to win in Europe and at... No, but the last year she lost at Europe to Paige.
Yeah. Evelina was the one that was popping off in Europe last year. Which, speaking of Evelina, someone actually brought this to my attention. Where the heck has Evelina and Henna been?
They're gone.
So I thought, like, they went back to Europe. Mm-hmm. I thought they were at least playing in Europe. No, they played Jonesboro end of April.
They deuced out.
No events at all until the PCS Open in next weekend or 2 weekends.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Wow, what just happened?
Just took a big old break. Very interesting. They kind of just deuced out.
Yeah, I don't know what exactly. That doesn't make sense to me. But anyways, they'll be back at PCS. On the MPO side, we had Ricky Wysocki back on top, taking it down. His first Elite Series win of the year. He had a silver event win earlier, I believe, the Cascade. Mm-hmm. And then Cole Radalin and Calvin Heimberg tied for second. Ricky looked like himself out there this weekend.
This was old Rick.
He apparently, his wrist was flaring up a little bit going into the final round. He said he took some ibuprofen and stuff. But he was raptor legging all over the place. He was making some big time putts when he needed to. Yeah. Notably, hole, I believe it was 12 and 16 were the two big outside the circle putts.
Made a few bombs.
And he was dropping them on Calvin, who couldn't make a putt to save his life, it felt like.
Yeah, and still shot pretty well that final round. What Calvin's tournament really comes down to is he just didn't score enough in round one. And if you're playing a 3-round event and you have a bad round or a slow round, because he wasn't really making bogey, just wasn't scoring.
Yeah.
And it was a weird round too, because he was like just landing like just outside of C1 a lot and just not making those putts. He just didn't score. So if you do that, you have a really high uphill climb, and he almost, you know, got back into it. But yeah, props to Ricky. He shut it down. He had a lot of guys chasing. You had Eagle and Cole Radalin shooting really hot that final round. Eagle just coming out of nowhere. And then and Cole Radalin, who has that kind of potential, was really pushing the narrative. And Rick, you know, had a slow start to the round, but then some clutch putting, some really important. Sometimes your clutchest putts are not those putts that are like for the win, but they're those putts where the guy who's chasing you just made birdie or is going to make birdie, and you've got to make a tough putt or a tough throw to make sure that you don't give him any more momentum.
Yeah.
You just like hold place with him, and that's what he was doing. He was just holding off Calvin, and it got really close too. It was what, one stroke or
somewhere in there,
one to two strokes. Like it was like all of a sudden, you know, look at the leaderboard, and it was really bunched in, and he was able to separate again.
He just kept slamming the door in Calvin's face.
Exactly. Yeah. Calvin would show up, slam the door every time, and that takes a lot. That was old Rick. You know, that's the Rick that we know. And man, with his injuries this year, it's just going to be like, it's going to be a guessing game as to when that Rick shows up. But what we've seen now is when Ricky is at his best, you know, he is still dominant. He can still beat anybody. And I think that we probably needed that reminder. And also that Ricky is the real deal in winning time. Like,
yes.
Ricky down the stretch is a guy who's going to beat you.
I think that's the key here is hurt or not hurt. Like,
he's clutch.
Injured or not, if you get Ricky in contention,
he's finishing.
He's winning.
He's going to win.
Because the thing is, like, I don't think, from what I understood, the first few rounds his wrist wasn't really bothering him.
Yeah.
But once he gets to the final round and he's in the lead, he's in contention, that wrist was not stopping him.
Yeah.
Like,
it could take a lot.
Yeah, I think that if Rick, how he was describing it going into the final round, I think had Rick been in like 25th to 30th, he probably would have been like, let me rest, let me get to Europe and just be safe. Because he wants to get to the majors healthy, because that's a key. If Ricky picks up a major or two, his whole season narrative, we're going to forget that he missed so much.
Certainly.
So I think had he been so far out of contention, like, that might have been something, and it probably would have been a wise thing had he been out of contention to say, let me rest up, but you get Rick in contention, and I think that there was nothing stopping him.
Yeah,
he was not going to let, and what was interesting is he didn't come out the gates hot, but fortunately for him, neither
nobody
did anyone
else. They were saying
other cards did, but
yeah, nobody on that card did. Yeah. It was that lead card like fatigue or that lead card like nerviness where sometimes those chase cards can catch up. They weren't quite close enough, but ultimately beginning of that round is when somebody had to make their move and nobody could. But even if they would have, you know, Ricky is one of the few players where if you give him four shots going into the final day, you see that stat pop up in front of other people's names and you're like, yeah, but look who's behind them. You know, Ricky is not that guy. Like, Ricky, you give Ricky four shots, he's probably going to win.
What's funny is, like, I fully agree with that statement now. You give me that statement in anything pre-2020, and I'm saying, yeah, but if Paul's the one behind him, no shot Ricky holds on. Because there was a period where
Paul was like the chase down artist.
Yeah, like, there was a period thing where, okay, Ricky's got six shots on Paul at the European Open, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Paul's probably going to win by three,
yeah,
is what it felt like. But Ricky, I feel like Ricky over time has developed his game. It's a shame that he has the Lyme disease flare-ups because I think he could be having a Calvin-esque season.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky's game has continued to develop and he's continued just to put his head down and work on and off the course to the point that, like, yeah, when Ricky's out there at 100% competing at his best, there is probably no one in the world that can beat him.
Yeah,
to be completely honest.
He absolutely could be a world number one. Well,
according to Udisky, he is the world number one.
Which is hilarious.
Not true. But because what you have to look at is, yeah, it looked really weird out there. Calvin missed some putts that it looked like I was putting for him at times. Like, they were some shorties that he was missing.
Yeah.
He was not confident on the putting green.
Been weird.
The dude finished in second place, a few strokes off the lead, and still shot 9-under the final round with a 50% C1X the final round and 0% C2. Still got to 9-under.
He hits fairways,
yeah,
man.
Calvin.
And he parks baskets.
Calvin is not a flashy player. He's not going to go out there and blow your mind. In person, he will because he throws far.
Yeah.
But on coverage, he just kind of just does his thing. And the next thing you know, you're like, I literally watched it. I was watching his round, and I was like, Calvin kind of sucks today. And I was like, he's literally 9-under. Yeah. Like, what am I saying? He sucks today.
He gets it done.
Like, he just gets the job done. And obviously, you know, we've seen this out of Calvin a few times where he just can't quite close the deal. He couldn't quite make the comeback happen.
Yeah.
But had his putt been on, the putts that he missed, he would have won by one, I believe, or tied Ricky, one of the two.
Calvin's one of those players. I think he's been like this a lot of his career, but especially these days, is definitely a victim of the, he gets attached that, like, sometimes can't win narrative. I think less these days than it used to, but he gets that narrative because he's in contention every week.
He puts himself in contention every
week.
So,
like, it's like you just don't win every week. That's just how it is. But he does win.
It's a two-sided coin or whatever. Like, he knows how to win, but he does get that narrative because, like you're saying, he finishes in top three probably more than anyone else.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you're constantly...
His average finish is 3.5 this year. It's insane.
When you're constantly in that position where you could win, then it feels like you never win.
Exactly.
Because, yeah, you're going to lose more than you win unless you're Christian Tatar right now. Another Twitter narrative that was happening that... I don't know if I believe it or not anymore. I was team 100%. This course has no scoring separation. This course needs to be harder. But then people started replying to me and like poking that ideology or whatever you want to call it. And I started looking into it more. Mm-hmm. Does this course actually have no scoring separation?
I the Preserve is an interesting course. It's one of those courses that maybe appears as something that it isn't. I do think it needs more OB. You know, I feel like there's probably a little bit of a lack. You don't really see a lot of bogeys. It's a complicated argument because I do think that a lot of courses in disc golf lack, and it literally is very simple. It comes down to OB, whether courses have enough or they don't, because disc golfers are way too good at disc golf that if you don't give them any OB, they just don't take bogeys. Really.
Yeah,
that's like you
true.
Look and you see all this blue on the scorecard. Putting is too easy, and that's
why. Let me look at course stats here.
Because putting in disc golf is easy, and the guys that are the best don't miss inside of 35, 40 feet really very often, they save their pars so often. And therefore, that's where the separation happens. Like, yeah, there's a par to birdie separation, but really, you want to have those par to bogey possibilities on a lot more holes. That's why some of the best holes in disc golf often end being reachable par fives, because you have a two-stroke window there, that eagle to par.
And if you have the
window.
Right type of OB, you have an eagle to bogey window.
Exactly. So that's the kind of separation I'd like to see more of. I think the Preserve doesn't quite have enough. Now, I will say this. Our field is deep enough, at least I would say both. I mean, definitely MPO, but really both fields are deep enough that the best players in the world, we have enough good players in the world, and their shot making ability is good enough that obviously you look at that leaderboard at the end of the day and you see the best names.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few kind of exceptions, but you see a leaderboard that looks like any other.
It looks like every leaderboard we've seen this year.
Right.
Almost looks more chalky than every leaderboard we've
seen
this year.
It looks pretty standard. And so I don't, and my here's my other thing is I'm okay with there being variety. For instance, on the PGA Tour, they just played the Rocket Mortgage and the winner finished, I think Ricky finished, they all went into that playoff at 25 under over four rounds, which for golf is pretty significant under par. And sometimes it gets even more. And I'm okay with there being a few events per year that are a little more of a shootout, a little more, but I mean, the winner finishing at 37 isn't even that crazy. I think my biggest qualm, though, is just like I don't mind shootout type golf a few times a year, like to keep things fresh. Like I think we should have, but I think we don't have enough of the courses that are like really demanding. Your better rounds are going to be like 3, 4, or 5 under par. Like I think we need to mix it up a little bit more. But it's a tricky one because I also think that disc golf, like, because of the nature of putting in disc golf and the fact that you only are interacting with your lie based on what's in front of you, not what's on the ground, like disc golf will always be different as far as how it relates to par and how courses are managed and whatnot. And really the only way we can complicate things is by, I think you could do more with the greens and then you got to tighten OB. So I think the Preserve could use a little bit of tweaking potentially to add some more bogey potential, because like ultimately that just makes for more exciting, more complex disc golf when guys can go out of bounds. And there's some more decisions to be made, but the event was still fine. Honestly, my whole thing with the Preserve course is like it's dead every year. That's kind of upsetting.
Yeah,
like the whole property is
dead. Doesn't look great.
Yeah, it's like the shape of the property is like pretty nice, and then like everything is dead, and it's like.
Well, they also so my original qualm with the Preserve was, I think, a fake qualm, because I thought that the course was too soft, and I felt like the scoring separation didn't exist.
I felt more like that in previous years.
That is true. I think this year what has happened is the field is so deep that it's eliminated that scoring separation even on hard courses.
There's just not randoms anymore.
That's what I'm saying. On hard courses, like what it used to happen.
There's like 30 guys that are just like very recognizable and serious contenders.
Yeah, because so what used to happen was you had your guys, 5 to 10 guys. You go to a hard course. Those are the guys that are going to compete. Those are the best disc golfers in the world.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist anymore. Like you said, there's now like 20 to 30. Like if I look at this leaderboard, if we do this last year, Cole Radalyn popping up, heck, even Double G, Andrew Presnell, Alden Harris being all these guys in the top 10, that probably would have been like, yeah, what the frick?
It's like, not shocking anymore.
But this, that's a normal leaderboard.
Yeah, because like these guys are all ranked in like the top 20 to 30. Like, yeah. These are all
like a top 30, players. A top 30 player shooting up and getting a top five doesn't mean it. Even outside the top 30. I think Double G's outside the top 30. Shooting up and getting top five. My jaw's not on the floor anymore.
Yeah.
I think we've become conditioned this year, and it's a better form of disc golf to there being way more people that could win every week so that this tournament fits the bill like every other week. Now, what this tournament I do think lacks is you don't see too many big numbers.
Yeah, that's the big
thing. And so I think what it does is when someone's down, it is really hard for them to come out of the hole.
What I don't want personally is you're going into that press conference and all the guys that were beneath Ricky by four shots were basically like, yeah, I basically have to do something incredible and shoot 17 under or 16 under today. And like, I don't really think that, like, that's cool when somebody does that. And like, that's fun and all, but I don't really think that that's the style of golf I would like to see. I'd like to see a guy just like know that, hey, if I put up a good number, a guy could take a few untimely birdies and I could get back into it.
You knew going into the final round, Ricky, you knew, almost didn't happen, but it did. Ricky was going to shoot 8 to 10 under at least.
Yeah,
you knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So if you're four strokes back, you're like, I have to shoot 12 plus. Realistically, you had to shoot 14 under. Calvin, to tie Ricky, was going to have to shoot 15 under to tie him, mm-hmm. is what it would have. And he knew that going into the final round. I think that is what the preserve...
It almost makes it a little predictable, maybe.
Yeah, it almost gets where there's no room to, like... Ricky was not going to go out there and shoot 5 under that final round. That was not going to happen.
That's never going to happen.
Is that the worst thing in the world? No, to be completely honest with you, because it does lead to an exciting finish. And it's not like we're doing this at Memorial where he's going to shoot 15 under because they're all par threes. He's throwing hyzers.
Right.
At least this, like, it was an interesting watch, but the course could definitely use some OB. You could also utilize there's still sand traps out there from where it used to be a golf course. Just make those hazards and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, especially on 18, I saw several guys landing in the sand traps. 18 was a very gettable eagle. Mm-hmm. You add those sand traps, it at least makes you think a little bit.
Yeah, what I have learned, and I know people hate the artificial OB, which I don't really completely get.
OB is artificial.
Yeah, I've never thought that art like the ropes and lines and whatnot, like,
because even those lakes that you think are natural, probably a man-made pond.
Yeah, so I understand that there are more pleasant ways to do it, but I have seen plenty of course design. There are a lot of ways to accomplish difficult shots without using that, and like, one of the biggest examples is really tough greens like that. When a lot of times when they play golf courses, the greens with all the different undulations and bunkers, even you take away the bunkers and you just add some like tricky slopes and like tighter landing areas, and it adds immediately, you know, a little more difficulty. Like, there are different ways to accomplish it, but yeah, I think I would. I don't really know. I'd like to know, like, if you're Cale LaVisca and you're kind of like setting your layout, like, what does he want out of that course? If I'm designing a course, you know, I think it's tough too, because disc golfers are so conditioned to low scoring disc golf, I should say, where they're getting all those birdies, that a lot of times the courses that I like on tour, I hear that the players hated it because there was OB. Like, and so, like, it's that tricky thing too, where if you're a course designer and you want to be liked, you almost have to make a course that guys are going to make a lot of birdies because that's what they want. But I'm starting to see more and more players. I think Presnell was tweeting about it, like, kind of like chime in.
Yeah, I will say Presnell tweeted and people came after him, like, oh, would he rather be blah, blah, blah back? And then he put up a fire final round and got into the top 10. So props to Presnell. He backed up. He was able to back up what he was putting out
there. A lot of people just, like, they just don't want to. And it's like a very much like two different type of spectator, because like, I am the type of spectator, I love, like, I would love it. I love USDGC. I think that course, you can shoot 14 under there and you can shoot 2 under.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and it's so easy because it's just like, you have to be on. And I realize that's an extreme example with the way they do OB, but I don't know. I've always preferred that. I would just like to see more orange on those scorecards. Like, I'd like to see more ups and downs.
Or at least opportunities for it. Where, like, you could at least, At least you know going into the final round, Ricky could shoot a 2-under.
Right.
That was not going to happen at the Preserve.
I don't think you should be able to look at a disc golf hole, or at least very many on a course, and be like, yeah, how in the world does Ricky take a bogey on this hole? Like, you'd have to do something so stupid. Like, does that make that a good hole? Because that's the one advantage that golf always has, is like, because putting is hard and because they can make the rough thick, you can have the easiest par three ever, but a guy hits into the rough or into the bunker and those greens are really fast. Well, yeah, of course bogey's in play. Automatically it's in play. If you on these courses, if you're 100 feet away from the basket and all that dude has to do is throw it within 35 feet, of course he's going to make a par. So like, that's the obstacle there. And because of that, that's why we have to use OB. I mean, that's why I always say the baskets be a little smaller, because you'd start seeing a lot more orange on those scorecards. The baskets.
Well, the other thing someone mentioned on, I forget where it was, somewhere I saw it, but they were talking about, like, in golf, a lot of time guys will have a number, like, for, I am not good enough at golf to have my number, but guys will want to hit it to, they could, hit it to, let's call it 80 yards, but they'd rather be at 120
yeah.
or something, because they're more comfortable with a certain club.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist in disc golf.
No.
Because you want to get as close to the basket as possible, because, yeah, I would rather be 100 feet and have a jump putt up than 150 feet and have a throw.
That would be fascinating.
But, that's something that maybe in disc golf that's not always going to be true. Because personally, I would rather be either at 200 feet or 80 feet. I hate being at, like, the 120 feet in disc golf because I hate the little touchy throw.
I think probably more disc golfers have a number than think they do, but they just don't. There's also not enough holes that demand that, because.
But that's what usually, someone was saying, is like why this course felt kind of broken was there are a lot of holes that it's just chuck it as far up there as you can, and then you just have a chip up.
Right. Yeah. Because like in disc golf, a lot of times you're focusing on hitting a line, and like that's more so the focus. Whereas in golf, you're focusing more so on hitting a number. But that would be interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to, like, tear after the Preserve, because, like, ultimately, I think they put on a pretty good event. Gallery seemed pretty solid.
Yeah.
They have some cool hole design. The whole disc golf course thing, what they want from it, it's going to be an ongoing thing. But, like, our best players in the world are still winning, still competing. I'm not really going to see – I'm not going to see huge issues until the leaderboards just look – super, super random. Because, like, I like Andrew Presnell, but ultimately, it doesn't really matter what the course is. Andrew Presnell's not going to win, probably. So,
I disagree. Who knows? Because, I mean, we just saw Parker Welk win. We just saw
Dale
get on the
lead card. I didn't say
he
can't win. I'm just saying, like, the best players in our world are still the ones that are most of the time winning.
Yes.
So, like, ultimately, that's where it's tricky.
Last year or 2 years ago, I would have fully agreed with the statement. It's just modern day disc golf. I've now, after this season, I've become conditioned to, like, I don't feel weird that Parker Welk won a few weeks ago. I didn't feel like it was DDO that he won. I didn't feel like it was broken.
That was still an anomaly. No, I didn't feel like it was broken that he won, but that was definitely an anomaly.
It was an anomaly, but, like, previously I'd have been like, there's got to be something wrong with this event for a rando to have been able to win.
No, it's
now I don't
it's
feel
changed.
Like there's something wrong with the event.
I don't know. I would just be curious to know, like, who is there, how much standard is there being set? Like, I would love to see the Pro Tour, and obviously, like, the Pro Tour doesn't even regulate what baskets are being used at this point. So, like, I don't know. I don't think their energy is a ton on this sort of thing. I think a lot. Now, to be fair, we were at the Collegiate Nationals, and they had sent out scouts early to scope out the gorge, decide what needed to be changed. Like, there's thought being put into that by the Pro Tour. But I'd be curious to know, and those are like Pro Tour employees. It's not even like it's just locals deciding how hard the course needs to be. But I would love to know, like, do they have a very, like, sound theory on, like, this is what we want out of our tour. We want this many events to play this way, this many to play this way. This event should always play this way. Like, should the U.S., like, I don't know. I'd be curious to, like, sit down with them and be like, what are you guys looking for in a course? And, like, are you trying to develop a consistent product? Certain events being this prog, certain events being the other, like, what do they want? And, like, and it's also a very hard job because, I mean, the properties are just so different.
Yes. It'd be a very interesting
Sometimes
conversation.
It's hard to know how they're going to play.
It'd be a very interesting conversation to have. The other storyline that kind of came out of this, the final one from the Preserve, and then we'll move on, was Drew Gibson sent out this tweet, said, as sad as I am to say this, it's something that needs to happen. I'm done competing for the season until I feel 100% healthy again. I'm headed back to Phoenix to see a specialist and get my elbow back in a condition that I can confidently compete at the level I know I can.
That's a bummer.
So, unsure when we will see Drew Gibson again. He could be done for the season.
That's a tough one, too.
He could be back in a few weeks.
He already, like avoids the sidearm throw, and I think he cited, at least to me, like elbow issues with that. If you're having, I had elbow, like I don't want to say issues, but definitely some. Like I played baseball growing up. If you've played baseball your whole life, you just have elbow pain. But for me, like a backhand throw has never engaged that typical pain that you get in your elbow. A forehand, if I throw enough, it'll definitely start to hurt. Because there's just so much less stress on it. So if you're getting pain in a backhand throw from the elbow, I don't even know. Like, I don't know if that's your typical, like, ooh, you need Tommy John to fix that, or like what ligament that involves. But yeah, I don't know.
Drew does have a very slow to quick acceleration whip.
He does. Yeah, he does have a pretty laggy throw.
It could be something where a typical backhand doesn't put stress on it, but maybe his backhand does.
I don't know.
It'll be interesting.
That's going to be, as much as like science as far as like finding the best form for disc golf, immediately alongside or behind that is going to be science on what creates healthy form for disc golf as well. That's another thing that just hasn't really been studied a ton, is like what form are people like using that is just damaging their body?
Yeah.
Or even more so than probably your arm, your hips and your knees.
Hips are a big one.
Yeah, my hips get crushed.
I'll do like a hip flexor stretch.
Oh, man.
And it like feels like there's a knife going in it. And I try to stretch out my hip flexors every day because they get lit up playing disc golf. So I try to stretch them every day.
I don't pivot hard enough.
And I'll like be doing the stretch and I'm like grimacing through the stretch trying to just like get my hip loose. And my wife will be like, oh, like, you know, I feel like I'm kind of tight there. Let me try. And she'll do it. And she can't feel a stretch doing the stretch I'm doing. I'm like, you're more advanced than me. Yeah, you need to get to a different stretch.
My hips are trash.
My hips don't lie. Maybe. Trevor's trivia, fan favorite segment. Let's hop into it. What do you got this week, Trevor?
All right. So we're gonna test some of your innova knowledge today.
I know a lot.
I was on their site because I was looking at this whole video about their rebranding and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
How was the designer they used?
Not true.
Not a true statement. Imagine if I was, and you're like telling me how much you don't like the new stamp and stuff, and I'm just like internally crying.
Their new logo, I don't really have a problem with that much. Like, I don't think it's great. It's whatever. It's really, I don't love just like the...
I don't like if the star stamps, the new like robot and all that crap is the stock star stamp. That will upset me.
I like the KC Pro and R Pro iterations. It's fantastic. Really,
I like the champ too. The new star, we'll have to see.
It just bores me a little bit. All right, so what we're going to do is I've got descriptions of 6 discs from their website. I'm obviously going to cut out the name. I try to pick some that are like, not like, this is the flatter version of the mid-range you always love. Like, that, like obvious.
Yeah, that's a makeup.
Yeah, exactly. So I've got 6 of them here. I think some of them you'll definitely get, and some of them will be a little bit trickier, and we'll see how many you can get here. Okay. The blank is our original professional level fairway driver. It ushered in a new era for distance and reliability. The blank's superior speed and predictable flight characteristics let you make confident and accurate long range power shots. The blank's high speed turn is excellent for power turnover shots.
It's got to be the eagle.
Correct. Yeah. It's probably the easiest one, but there's definitely some words in there that are a little like old school.
Yeah.
The way they talk about it, but the original professional level fairway. Yeah. All right. That was the easiest one.
Heck yeah. Good, I didn't miss that one.
The Innova Blank was developed to go straight and far effortlessly. With Blank's gentle turn and unmatched glide, tightly wooded fairways feel open and attackable. When another fairway driver would fade and drop, Blank holds on the line of release and carries. Great for standstill and low ceiling shots that still need to get distance. Blank also makes an exceptional roller disc even when new.
Leopard.
No.
Dang it. Do I keep guessing?
You can keep guessing. I'll give you a couple guesses.
See, I don't know if they're either going to be like way off or close, because the other one that could be close to this is like Roadrunner.
Definitely pandering to the beginners with this description. It's pretty, like, if it were you and I, the description would be a lot more extreme of what it does.
It could be like the It.
That's
it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like it starts out, it does, until they get to a roller disc, even when new, you wouldn't really, because they're talking about like gentle turn and unmatched glide.
Yeah,
it's not gentle when somebody with further than
350. That's why I was thinking leopard. And like that's how they would.
I wouldn't. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. All right, 1 for 2.
Dang it.
The blank is an easy to throw, very long range driver for a wide variety of players. A mild high speed turn puts the blank in glide mode, which along with its high aerodynamic speed, give it incredible distance. I think it gives it. The low-speed fade is also mild, which makes it easy to keep on the fairway. The blank is similar to our popular turn, but faster and slightly more high-speed stable.
Shrike.
got it.
Yeah, I was thinking Strike the whole time, but I was worried that it might be like their new charger because they described that disc like my dream disc, and it was way more stable than I thought it was going to be.
All right, 2 for 3. That was a good one. This would be a good one too. The blank is a small diameter putter with a straight flight. The blank is especially good for long range putts and gopher shots. That's an interesting term.
There you go.
It has a flight similar to our AVR putting approach, but has less low speed fade and a little more range. The nice thing about this disc, besides the improved grip, is that it holds the line for a long time.
So it's got to be in like R Pro or something. I'm going Dart.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That last line there.
The whole time I was trying to think if the Dart was a smaller profile or not.
Yeah, it is a little bit. Dart's a pretty sick disc. All right.
Three for
four. That's pretty good. The blank is a very reliable, overstable mid-range disc with a predictable finish. The blank delivers pinpoint accuracy for shorter drives and approach shots, even in windy conditions. This is a great disc for mid-range shots, especially for players who need to control their power to increase their accuracy.
Toro. Dang it. I mean, is it?
I don't think the Toro is considered a mid-range.
That's what I thought you were trying to throw me off with. Because like if you just take out the word mid-range, it sounds like a Toro.
It does.
Because I don't know. I mean, I would consider it a putting approach, but it's a 4-speed, so. Then are we going rock? Surely they would go more
Come
with
on,
history
Hunter?
Of that.
You know this.
Gator?
Yes.
Okay.
The Gator. People forget about the Gator, clearly.
Yeah.
The Toro is a fair guess, but yeah, I think they consider it a putter. All right, last one. This one.
They probably would have used the word new a lot more in the Toro.
I think, yeah, probably. A great performing disc that can take and hold the angle of release. Turnover shots stay turned over and hyzer shots stay hyzer. Excellent for staying on narrow fairways and threading through forests.
TL.
I'll give you a hint because this one's really vague. This one is a mid-range.
Oh. Well, shoot. The J. Yeah. Tomeko 3.
Tomeko.
Okay.
That was a pretty vague one. That was a pretty vague one.
Well, dang it.
3 for 6. Not
bad. I knew it.
It's impressive you got some of those. That was difficult.
All right. We're going to skip the European Open announcement thing. Basically, they're holding post-produce only for 16 days instead of 30 days, but they're still, you'll only be able to watch European Open on DGN and even post-produce coverage. And then 16 days later, post-produce will be released on Jomez and MDG Media. Something that the European Open has done previously, but it was a 30-day hold. Now it's only 16. All right. World rankings update.
Power rankings update.
Grip Lock power rankings. Universe it has rankings. Been a minute. So where they currently sit, Calvin 1, Gannon 2, Isaac 3, Eagle 4, Simon 5, Kyle 6, James Proctor 7, AB 8, Ricky 9, Ezra 10.
This is going to be...
I don't know what
up,
this was
baby.
Through.
Buckle up. Well,
Calvin stays 1.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Well, yeah, considering where we had Rick, yeah, I mean, but I think Rick is going to jump pretty handily, probably like 3rd.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think we got to go Stat Mando and go Ricky to, let's go Ricky to Gannon to begin it off with.
If you go Ricky to Calvin, Calvin is 6-1 against him this year.
Yeah, no, Ricky, Calvin is head and shoulders above the field.
Ricky's going to be a tricky one, though.
We're just going to go back.
He's had a pretty good average finish, but he's taken some... Like, if you were a player that's living in the top 5...
We're going to go April on, because obviously we want recency bias to be there.
Of course.
And we're going to go Ricky.
One of these days, we're going to develop... We're going to, like, actually write an algorithm for this. Although, I think that would defeat the purpose.
So, Gannon's 4-3-1 against Ricky in that time frame.
But doesn't have a win in that time frame, or has one?
Gannon won Des Moines.
Fake win.
Well, it was only 2 rounds. He also won the Blue Ridge Championship, which is silver. Also a fake win because Ricky also has a silver.
I would say you give Rick the slight edge, but it's very close. Like Gannon holds right beneath him probably.
Ricky has beat Gannon by 11 strokes during that time frame.
Yeah, and he just won. Like I'm okay with Ricky sitting.
Okay, so we go Ricky 2. We'll try to go Ricky to Isaac Robinson just to make sure.
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, he did just win. I'm okay with having the slight edge.
Ricky's 5-3 against Isaac. Okay,
yeah.
So we're good there.
Rick's
so
been
Ricky
sneaky,
gets
these,
cut
I'm okay.
from
I'm,
ninth I'm okay and gets a, put into second.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. But I think Gannon is right there. He's still right there.
Gannon's
in third.
There. Isaac stay 4 probably. Should we go Isaac to Eagle just to see? Because Eagle has come back. Pair them 3-3-1, so they're pretty knotted up. They both have 1 win during that time frame. What did Eagle? Oh, Eagle won Beaver State. Isaac won Champions Cup, a major. So I think Isaac's got to have the win. Isaac also, Eagle finishing 55th at OTB. Isaac's worth finish is 31st.
As of recent, Eagle has been better the last three events.
Yes, the last three. Eagle's trending up. Isaac's neutral, maybe even trending down. But I think for right now, we're fine to leave Isaac, Eagle. Next, we have Simon.
Simon's going to be a tricky one.
I think let's go Simon to Proctor really quick.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
And just see where that sits us. Proctor's 4-3 against Simon during this time frame. Simon does have one win, which is at Music City, but it was the earliest you could possibly have.
Since Simon won that, his finishes have been less than inspiring.
Yes.
Whereas Proctor has been much more consistent.
So Proctor, we're going to ignore Music City. We're going to go since Music City. Proctor's went 36th, 11th, 5th, or 6th, 5th, 38th, 5th. Simon's went 13th, 23rd, 51st, 17th, 7th, 17th.
It's still pretty
neither
close.
Are great.
Yeah.
I'd
be okay with giving Proctor the slight edge. But I mean it doesn't, you don't really have to budge.
Well, but so really, that would jump him Kyle Kline. So let's go Kyle Kline to Simon.
Kyle Kline, I feel like he's doing a little bit better.
Maybe. Kyle Kline is worse than Simon.
2-3.
In that time range.
Oh gosh.
Oh, Kyle Never Kline. Mind. He's been trash. So Proctor's got to at least jump Kline. Let's just double check that.
Dang, dude. This is what's wrong with this Elo system is like Kyle Kline hasn't really been skidding, so I've been just misled.
So they're 3-3 in that time frame.
We got a whole bunch of average schmojos. We might need to start looking for some new blood.
I think James Proctor can jump Kyle Kline right now.
We're gonna have to look at you know who's not in right now that probably needs to get back in is Matty O.
You know who else is not in? Aaron Gossage.
And the Goose Man. But Matty O for sure is gonna
let's just go Matty O versus Proctor.
Like there's no way he's been good over the last few events. There's no way he doesn't jump.
He's 3-2 against James Proctor.
He's for sure.
Well, he hasn't been that good, Trevor.
What the heck?
Since April 30th, 24th, 5th, 18th, 23rd.
Never mind, I'm capping. He hasn't been that good.
But he's been better than Proctor though.
So
okay.
We just got a whole bunch of average Joe Schmo going on.
And Proctor just jumped Kyle Kline, so that means Matty O's been better than Kyle Kline. Has Matty O been better than AB?
No, AB's actually been good. AB's been good.
3-2.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
So AB...
AB's been pretty sneaky.
AB, we might need to look at jumping higher.
We haven't updated this since Hammers won either, I don't think.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's going to get... Just buckle in. It's going to get dicey.
Okay. Kyle Kline, I think, is going to end up being outside top 10.
God dang.
Delete it.
We're going to have to look at Ezra.
James Proctor,
well.
Very possible outside the top 10.
Look at Ezra versus Hammers, because he would technically be on the back end. I mean, Hammers just had a win, so it'd be pretty tough for him not to sneak into the top 10. 2-3-2.
So since April.
Hammers has been pretty good.
Hammers has won 11th, 44th, 13th, 1st, 72nd, 18th, 101st.
What the heck? Okay, well,
he
must have died or something.
Did he DNF at the preserve?
There's no way he didn't.
He did not.
Oh my gosh, he actually did that?
He just shot 6-under for the event.
Okay, you're automatically out of the top 10.
Yeah, Hammers is gone.
You can't take 101st. I don't care if you just won.
Yeah, I don't understand what just happened, but surely there's an injury somewhere in there.
That's
but
crazy, dude.
He's gone.
I got to have to check the Instagram on that one.
All right.
There must be an explanation.
I think Matty O. Okay, let's go AB.
Whoops.
Did I already do AB to Matty O?
No.
AB is better than Matty O. So I think we can put... And Matty O, I believe, was better than Aderhold.
Hammers just posted they had an ace on the pond hole.
Aderhold's better than Matty O. So I think we put Matty O at 10th, just so that we know he's in here.
Just so we know.
Matty O. AB, we need to compare to Eagle McMahon and see where we're at there. Barella to McMahon. Okay, Eagle's better than AB. Let's go Barella to Simon.
He's got to be better.
AB is smoking Simon. Yeah. Okay, so AB belongs
AB's a dog,
in sixth.
Dude. If none of these schmoes are winning anything and the guys that are winning are taking 100th the next event, then AB has been pretty good for a guy that can't win.
Who else were we saying? The Gooseman. Let's go Gooseman to AB.
Who kind of fell off a little bit, I think, after after basically he was a goaded and then DDO hit and he was supposed to be goaded and he wasn't.
Okay, AB better. Let's go Gooseman to Simon.
Mlizoot.
Simon Bettert.
Okay.
See, so Guzman to Proctor.
I'm starting to think Gossage just had like two good tournaments.
I think he did. Proctor better. Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron Gossage outside the top 10. Anyone else we're missing?
I don't know.
We have Calvin 1, Ricky 2, Gannon 3, Isaac 4, Eagle 5, AB 6, Simon 7. Should we look at Ezra Robinson?
Oh, dude. Yeah, he's been sneaky lately. He has been sneaky.
Compare him to Aderholt real quick.
Yeah.
They're 3-3, Ezra versus... And you know what I learned? Ezra Robinson is Isaac's younger brother. I thought he was his older brother.
I also thought that.
No, he's apparently his younger brother.
Okay.
So
that does change what I think about him in the power rankings.
He is tied with Ezra Aderholt. Is he better than Matty O? We might have two brothers in the top 10.
The other guy that I feel like is...
He's not better than Matty O right now.
The other guy that's probably going to... Probably would be... in there if he was in the U.S. right now is Antilo. I feel like Antilo's been pretty good lately, but he's just not.
Okay, so Ezra Robinson tied with Ezra Aderholt, but is doing worse than Matty O or James Proctor head-to-head.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. Another one's
Bradley Williams. He's over there.
Simon Lizotte's also tied with Ezra Aderholt or Robinson. Ezra Robinson's an anomaly.
We might have to check on Alden. Let me see what Alden's been doing here. He didn't play well in Des Moines, but previous to Des Moines,
he is better than Simon.
He's had some top 10s rattling off. Yeah, we might be sleeping on Alden.
Okay, let's go to Proctologist. Proctologist is absolutely giving it to Alden Harris.
Streaky players are so hard to like factor into this because Alden's been pretty consistent. Simon's just so streaky.
Alden Harris versus Ezra Aderholt, please. Hard not
to be streaky in today's game.
They're tied. Let's just go to Matty O.
Nobody can beat Matty O, dude.
Alden Harris tied with Matty O. I think we give the edge to Alden Harris.
Do it.
I think we wrap that up there.
Okay.
Calvin, Ricky. So this is the top 10. Calvin 1, Ricky 2, Gannon 3, Isaac 4, Eagle 5, AB 6, Simon 7, Proctor 8, Aderholt 9, Alden Harris 10.
There you have it.
Okay, FPO. We currently have Kristen, Own, Paige, Cat, Merch, Sayananda.
I feel like low-key, Ella and Hall and Hanley have both played well the last like three events.
I wish I could just do head-to-head and not have to switch over to FPO.
That
like,
is
I
wish, weird.
I don't like that they're two different because I have to reset my dates. Okay, April...
Cat Merch has like stayed relevant.
Cat Merch to Holland Hanley. Yeah,
that's a good one to do. Love that start.
Cat Merch wins.
Okay, that's good news.
Okay, Cat Merch to Ella Hansen.
You know who hasn't been playing disc golf is Owen Scoggins.
Cat Merch wins. Cat Merch to Katrina Allen. Because Katrina Allen's not in our top five and just won. Katrina Allen wins. Oh, okay.
So Cat needs to get in.
So Katrina Allen, welcome to the top five. How high does she go versus Paige Pierce? Paige, the fierce Pierce. Katrina Allen beats her out.
I think we had last time we had updated this, Paige just won.
Maybe we updated after OTB?
Something like that.
Katrina Allen is better than Paige Pierce right now. It's not even really close.
It's not really that crazy of a statement.
Okay, well, let's just go Katrina Allen to Owen Scoggins.
Owen hasn't been playing. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. When's the last time Owen played?
Well, we're going to find out.
Either that or she's just been living on the bottom of the leaderboard. Because, yeah.
Owen's 6-0 against her since April.
When's the last time she played?
June 1st. Portland Open. She came in third.
When she... Go down to her... So she just missed...
She missed, like, two events.
It just seems like so long.
Okay, so I think we go...
Maybe it was just 2 weeks in a row. I wanted to pick her in my top three.
Katrina Allen. And then... Sayananda's out of here.
I want Owen Scoggins to win.
We just need to see.
So bad. I want Owen Scoggins to win an event.
Does Cat Merch, Missy Gannon? I think that's the final comparison to
Missy's
look at.
Been pretty good, too, lately.
Missy Gannon's better than Cat Merch. Final one, we need to go Valerie Mandahano versus Missy Gannon. Missy Gannon wins. Okay, so Missy Gannon, welcome to the top five. Boom. Kristen Tatar, 1. Owen Scoggins, 2. Katrina Allen, 3. Paige Pierce, 4. Missy Gannon, 5. That looks like a normal FPO top five again.
Yeah, it looks about right.
We're back to where it was a few years ago.
Gosh, dude, Owen Scoggins.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's Grip Locked. Pretty long episode, but hey, there's a lot to cover this week. Hopefully you enjoyed. No tournament this week. No, Kansas City Wide Open, a little silver event going on.
Just a little silver.
Just a little silver event. So, yeah, no events this weekend. We'll recap that A tier when we're back in the booth next week.